Anything Goes, number 42, June 16th, 2007. Welcome to Anything Ghost. My name is Lex, and this is podcast number 42. And I got a lot of stories to read this week, a lot of personal paranormal experiences, and some EVPs were sent in to me. I'll play those. And also, someone mailed in or emailed in a MP3 of their story. So I'll play that for you. And we'll get right into the stories. Okay, this first one's from Rachel in Minnesota. Hi Lex, sorry if my story gets a little long, but I'll try to keep it short. My friend had a birthday party back in March, and my mom dropped me off at a friend's house. We'll call this friend Allie. So Allie's dad collects antiques in their basement, and I thought it would be a good idea to do some tarot card readings, a seance, and to use her Ouija board. So we got a bowl of corn chips, some candles, and the board. While I'm figuring out how to use the tarot cards, Allie lights the candle, but goes upstairs to use the bathroom. So now, I'm reading the instructions I found in the box, with my back to the candle, facing the stairs. I have a fear of fire, so I can't have anything near any candles I light. So there's a circle around the candle, about 3 feet across. When Allie came back down to the basement, a large piece of cardboard was leaning against the candle. It's still really scary to me thinking about it now, just remembering how first the cardboard wasn't there, but then it was. I love your podcast. Keep it up, please. And thanks. That's Rachel in Minnesota. And this is a listener in San Jose, California. I live in San Jose, California, but before I moved here, when I was 7, I lived in Ridgefield, Connecticut. One night, when I was around 6 years old, I went to bed and my parents went to watch TV downstairs. Their bedroom was next to mine and my sister's room was on the other side. Well, it was a warm and humid night, so my windows were open. I woke for a reason I cannot recall around 3 a.m. I know my parents and sister were asleep because I could hear my dad snoring. My bed was against the wall, and I made sure to sleep facing the wall because the night was so warm and uncomfortable. I decided to turn my head away from the wall. It was then that I saw a man standing in the room. He was wearing what looked to be a Confederate soldier's uniform, and he was glowing. I immediately pulled what little cover I had over my head in hopes that he wouldn't see me. I felt paralyzed, as if something was preventing me from screaming. I knew that if I banged on my parents' wall to get their attention, that this person, this thing, would surely know I was there, and the thought of it looking at me was terrifying. I will never forget how hot it was under that thin cover that protected me from whatever it was that I had just seen. Maybe I was dreaming. Maybe I was just being silly. Maybe I let my imagination get away with me, but how could I explain my alarm clock going off by itself at 2 a.m. when it was set for 7 a.m.? This happened only a few weeks after I saw the apparition. That's it for now. Your podcast is so intriguing and the best I've heard yet. I'm working on my own podcast, so I know how much work goes into a single episode. Since I have more stories of my own and my own recording equipment, I might send you my next story via MP3. It's a real spooky one. Makes me cringe just thinking about it. Okay, so thanks so much for the story, and good luck with your own podcast. And this is just a hello from Yvonne. I just wanted to drop a quick email to let you know that I really enjoy your podcast. I think you're doing a great job, and I look forward to each episode. Have a wonderful day, Yvonne. All right, thanks, Yvonne. It's always nice to hear. And thanks, everyone, for all the email you send in. And I'm sorry I don't always get around to replying, but it's very much appreciated. And this next one is from Kim in South Carolina. This experience took place when my sister and I were about 13 years old. My grandmother, Nana, was in her home alone near Christmas. She lived alone in Sevierville, Tennessee, much against our constant urging that she move closer to us. On Christmas Day, we could not reach her by phone, and I had been trying to reach her for a couple days previous. So, my mother called the local police to check on her. They found her dead in the house. As best they could tell, she had fallen in the bathroom while getting out of the shower and had hit her head on the bathroom sink and bled to death. She had been dead in the house for a few days when the police found her. It was very sad to me, the thought of her there in that house all alone for days like that. This was also extremely difficult for my mother, who had tried very hard to stay in touch with her and visit often. We took a trip to Tennessee to plan the funeral and to make arrangements. Money was tight, so we spent the night at Nana's house. I should also mention that my sister and I had always felt uneasy in this house, sometimes even scared. The house felt heavy to us, a kind of menacing. It was the sort of house that is always dark inside, even when the lights are on and the windows are uncovered. My asthma always got bad when we stayed there, and we had a hard time sleeping there, often waking up in the night. The night we arrived to prepare for Nana's funeral, the house seemed unusually cold. It wouldn't get warm no matter how we adjusted the thermostat. My twin sister reluctantly went first in the bathroom where Nana had died to take a shower. The water started running and all seemed normal. About 10 minutes into her shower, I heard a sound like a window being shattered coming from the bathroom. It was followed by screams of my sister still in the shower. My mother burst through the door to find the large bathroom mirror completely shattered, still hanging partly on the wall. Other pieces were strewn all over the bathroom, even into the shower floor, as if something heavy had struck the mirror with incredible force. My sister was hysterical and didn't want to come out of the shower, but finally did. The most frightening aspect of this was the look of fear on my mother's face when this happened. She couldn't bring herself to comfort us or to try to explain it. She was terrified. We all three slept in my grandmother's bed that night, afraid to be in the room alone. I have thought about this occurrence for many years and still cannot explain what would cause a mirror to shatter like that. I have always wondered if it was my grandmother, and if so, was she upset or just letting us know that she was there with us? Whatever it was, in that house, it felt angry. On a side note, it took nearly 3 years for the house to sell after Nana's death, and since it has been resold several times according to her neighbors, though I am unaware of the reason. Okay, and that's the piece that started it all. I wrote that a couple of years ago for Haunted New Jersey, and they used it in the beginning of their podcast while they're doing the introductions. And I was very proud of that. I thought it was a good piece. And before they used it, I was using it for my podcast because I didn't think they wanted it. But they got things going again, I guess. They put out a podcast a couple weeks ago, so check them out. And right now I'm going to play an MP3 story that Laura sent in. And it's a bit long, so just be patient. And here's the story from Laura.
Here goes. My name is Laura, and I'm from San Francisco. In 1997, I was living in Ithaca, New York, where my mother and my two half-brothers live. I had been living with a good friend in a two-bedroom apartment, but our schedules didn't really overlap. In mid-September, I decided to find a new place to live. I wasn't making much money at the time, so I decided to move into a very small efficiency studio on the edge of town. It was in a large apartment complex that was probably built in the 1980s. It was new, pretty shoddy construction, essentially built as low-income housing. My apartment was on the ground floor. It was basically one large room with a small bathroom and small closet-style kitchenette off to one side. At the back of the room was a large closet with sliding mirror doors on it. It wasn't great, but the price was right. I moved in on October 1st, 1997. At first, I really liked having my own space. I had been living with my roommates for so long that I really enjoyed coming home to the solitude and the fact that there was no mess or dirty dishes, because I'm sort of a neat freak. The only downsides to the apartment, which I noticed right away, were that when I came home after work every day and walked in the door, when the room had been shut up all day, there was a faintly sick, sweet odor. It was like rotting leaves or garbage. Since I'm a very clean person, this frustrated me. I knew there was no garbage and that all the surfaces were clean. I would open the windows and I burned scented candles, which dispelled the smell temporarily. But whenever I came home after being away for a few hours, it was back again. The other thing about the apartment that became more and more of a problem as October gave way to November was that it was very, very cold. I chalk this up to the fact that it was a cheaply built building. It had poor or no insulation, and the carpet was just this thin indoor-outdoor type. The thing was, even in November, when the temperatures were beginning to fall, it was often warmer outside than it was in my apartment. I decided that this was because a bad designer had placed the electric heating unit along the wall under the only window in the apartment, which meant that all the heat was being sucked right out of the insulated window. This is where the story gets difficult to tell and why I've had to work up the courage to tell it. As maybe many of your listeners know, paranormal events seem to happen at times when you're particularly sensitive to them. Between November and December, I began to feel more and more depressed and became more reclusive. This is not like me. I'm pretty outgoing. Though I do enjoy my solitude and my time alone, I like to read and write a lot. Family and friends have always been important to me. But during mid-November of that year, I began to feel a crushing depression. The thing is, I had a history of depression. When I was 15, I had tried to take my own life, and I had been in therapy for many years after that. When my mood and thoughts began to turn darker and more filled with despair, I really thought I was just experiencing another round of a cycle of depression. I knew that eventually it would pass, so I just tried to buckle down and endure this round of it. Around the end of November, beginning of December, a couple of things happened that did not seem strange at the time, but later made a lot of sense. First of all, I had been getting a lot of junk mail, but somehow the companies that were sending me the mail had got my name wrong. The first name and middle initial were correct, and the first part of the last name was right, but the last name was slightly different than mine. I thought that somehow I must have ended up on one of those mass marketing lists somewhere, and they had just typed my name in wrong. The mailboxes for the whole apartment building were on this island in the middle of the parking lot out front. Whenever I walked out there to get my mail, I would wave to this perpetual group of teenagers that hung out in front of the building, gossiping and smoking. I remember thinking what jerks they were because whenever I came out there, they got quiet and seemed to be waiting for me to leave. When I left, I'd hear them start whispering to each other. But teenagers are teenagers. I just shrugged it off. But it definitely added to this atmosphere of depression and isolation that was weighing more and more heavily on me. A similar thing with the junk mail was happening with telemarketers calling on my phone. This was before the federal no-call list, and at least twice a week I was getting calls for someone with my same first name but a slightly different last name. The first 2 weeks of December, things got worse. My mother and I had had a falling out and she wasn't speaking to me. I think it was over some advice I had given my oldest half-brother and that she had taken issue with. I spent all my free time alone in my apartment, lying in bed and reading. I didn't have a TV. It was so cold that I used an electric blanket for heat, which worked better and cost a lot less than the electric heat in my apartment. I was very down over the fight with my mother, but I didn't want to talk to anyone about it. When my friends came by, I ignored their knocks and pretended I wasn't home. I didn't answer the phone, and I didn't return anyone's calls if they left a message on my machine. That was when I had the first dream, if you can call it that. Even now, comparing it to all the dreams I've had in my life, it's definitely different. I was awake, but I was in that state between awake and asleep where you're still aware of your surroundings, but aren't completely alert. That was when I heard a woman say to me, "I need your help." I thought to myself, "I am dreaming." So I thought back at her, "Why do you need my help?" She answered, "I'm stuck here and I can't get out." I remember feeling very, very cold and the most intense kind of black unhappiness I had ever felt in my life. It was the bleakest sensation of being utterly alone and utterly devastated. I thought in my head to her again, "But how can I help you?" She answered, "I need you to carry me. I need to attach myself to you so that you can carry me out of this place. I can't do it on my own." Even in the half-dreaming state I was in, what she said scared the heck out of me. I knew in some part of myself that it would be very bad to say yes to her. But another part of me believed that all of this was just my own imagination and part of my own depression, that I was slipping so far down this time that maybe another part of myself was appealing to me for help, that maybe I was just carrying on a conversation with my own psyche. That was when I decided that I would say yes, because I wanted to help myself. I thought back to the voice, "All right, you can do it. I will help you." I slept through that night. When I woke up the next morning, it was snowing. I felt a strange sense of not being really connected to myself, like I was watching myself get up and make coffee, wash my face, etc. I think it was a Sunday. I remember I didn't have to go to work that day. And this is when the story gets really strange and frightens me even now. For some reason, after I drank my morning coffee, I went into my closet and got out a pile of clean white sheets. I had about 5 or 6 of them. Standing on a chair, I tacked them to the ceiling with pushpins so that they hung down around my room, sort of like artificial walls made out of white sheets. I put them up at right angles to each other so that they formed a kind of tunnel that went from my bed to the front door. Even now, I have no idea what possessed me to do this. It is so completely weird that it's embarrassing to admit even now. After I had tacked up the sheets, I crawled into my bed with a box of cookies. I knew then that I was going to kill myself. The idea just came to me all of a sudden as if it were the obvious solution or just a very simple thing that I needed to do. Just then, my phone rang and the answering machine picked up. It was my mother. She said, "Honey, please call me. I'm sorry. I'm worried about you." I sat and looked at the phone for a long time, and then I picked it up, and then I put it back down. I got up and got the phone book, and I looked up a suicide prevention hotline, and I called. I talked to the woman on the other end for about an hour. I didn't tell her about any of the weird things that had happened. I really thought that I was losing it, that I had gone crazy. I just wanted to hear the sound of a voice that was not judging me, somebody who didn't know me. After she talked to me for about an hour, she gave me the number of a local sliding scale counseling center and made me give her my word that I would call them as soon as I hung up with her. I did. I made an appointment to see someone the next day. The rest of that day was really difficult for me. I tried to distract myself by cleaning the apartment. While doing so, I discovered something that really scared me. All along the edges of the windows and on parts of the mirrored closet door, I discovered a kind of black mold that had begun to grow. I thought at first it was just discolorations on the mirror or in the wood that framed the windows, but when I looked closer, I realized they had the circular, spattered pattern of mold. I had a degree in biology, so I knew that it was mold, but I had never seen this kind before. I went to the counseling session the next day, and the woman I spoke to told me that she wanted to work with me twice a week for as long as we needed. I began to talk to her about a lot of secrets and deep troubles that I had been carrying around with me for years. I was put on antidepressant medication. Within a few weeks, I was starting to feel better. The atmosphere in my apartment was still bad. I still noticed the smell, but I took down the weird sheets and started spending more time with my friends. My mom and I patched things up. I began to believe that all of the strange events, my strange behavior, and my experience with the woman's voice who asked me to help her had been symptoms of my depression. I was slowly rising back out of the paralysis I had felt. In January, I was on my way across the parking lot toward my apartment one afternoon when the property manager, who was standing on her balcony on the second floor, called out to me and waved me over. We introduced ourselves to each other, and when I told her my name, she looked startled. She asked me a few questions about whether or not I was happy with the apartment or not. I told her it was okay, but it was cold and a little bit lonely. She said, "Can I ask you a more personal question?" I felt a little strange, but I thought, why not? "Yes," I said. She said, "Do you notice anything strange about your apartment, like a funny smell or anything like that?" I have to say that at that moment, I felt that strange feeling when the hair on the back of your neck stands up. I knew that she was about to tell me something that I both wanted and did not want to know. I told her, yes, that I did sometimes notice a funny smell, but that I kept things very clean and burned candles and that it wasn't too bad, just when I first got home was when I really noticed it. "That's good," she said. "You just let me know if you need anything." Then she asked me my name again. I told her, and she said something like, "That's what I thought you said, but I thought I didn't hear you right." I knew there was something the woman wasn't telling me. For the next month, in the back of my mind, I kept thinking about that interaction. I decided that if I ran into her again, I would ask her for more details. On Valentine's Day that year, my dad and stepmother, who live in California, sent me a flower bouquet. They knew I didn't have a boyfriend, and they were just being sweet because they knew I had been down. Since it came in the middle of the day when I was at work, it was delivered to my upstairs neighbors, whom I had never met. Shortly after I came home, there was a knock on my front door. When I answered it, there was a man in his 40s standing there, holding the bouquet of flowers in a vase. "Are you Laura?" he asked. "Yes," I said. He gave me the strangest look and then said, "These came for you today." I took the flowers, but when I went to thank him, he turned away and almost bolted up the stairs. He looked like he'd seen a ghost. It was either the next day or a couple of days later that I was leaving my apartment when a little girl who lived in the apartment complex was riding by my door on her big wheel. Since my door was open, she stopped and looked inside. She was about 5 or 6 years old. "Hi," I said, "you can come in if you want." She seemed very curious about the inside of my apartment, but she shook her head and started backing away from the door, pushing with her feet to move her big wheel backward. I went outside and was locking my door behind me, and she was still sitting there on her big wheel. She said, "Did you know the lady that died?" I said, "What?" She said, "The lady that died," and pointed at my apartment. "A lady died there?" I said. She nodded. I squatted down so that I was at eye level with her. "When did this happen?" I said, but she didn't answer. She looked pretty scared. "That's okay," I said. "Bye-bye, I'll see you later." I went directly upstairs and knocked on the property manager's door. "Look," I said, "I'm sorry to bother you, but I need to ask you a question." She looked at me like she knew what I was going to say. "A little girl just told me that a woman died in my apartment. Is that true?" She looked at me for a few seconds and then she nodded. "I didn't want to say anything to you," she said. "The rental agency said that I shouldn't say anything." "What happened?" I said. "She committed suicide," she answered. "When?" I asked. "The day after Princess Diana died. I guess she was a huge fan of Princess Diana, and they think her death had something to do with it. Princess Diana died on August 31st, 2007, which was exactly a month before I moved in." The woman went on to tell me that the woman who committed suicide in my apartment was a recluse. She almost never came out of her apartment except to go shopping or when she had to. So they didn't find her body at first. It was my upstairs neighbors that started to notice a bad smell about 2 weeks later, and that's when they opened it up and found her. The woman told me the following. She said it was really bad. She had been decomposing for 2 weeks, and it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. There was this black mold growing all over everything, the walls and the mirrors. They had to throw everything of hers away because it was covered with black mold. Honestly, I was feeling right then the way you probably feel right now listening to this. There is no way this could really be true. I had to have been making this up, but I'm not. Still, some part of me then, even with everything I had been through, didn't believe her. So here's what I did. I went to the Tompkins County Library and looked up the obituaries on microfiche for September of 1997, and I found her obituary. She was a writer from California. I'm from California, and I'm a writer. She was 20 years older than me, and her first name, middle, and last initial were the same as mine. With a photocopy of the obituary in my hand, I went to the rental agent's office. I asked her if it was true, and she admitted that it was. I asked her why or how she could possibly, in good conscience, have rented an apartment to me when I had almost exactly the same name as the woman who had committed suicide in the apartment only a month before I moved in. She didn't have a good answer, but she was very apologetic and offered to let me move into a different unit right next door. I did, but 1 month later, I moved out of the apartment complex entirely. I didn't feel like a single wall between the two apartments was enough to really make any difference. I still don't really understand what happened to me. The circumstances of what happened were so intimately tied up in my own mental state and life that it's impossible for me to believe that this could really have happened to anyone else. It was as if I was meant to move into that apartment. But I'm not a person who simply believes things. The facts have to support the feelings. In this case, the facts are what made what I thought was a severe bout with depression into something I have no other way to describe as also paranormal. I realize this is a very long story. I hope you can share it with your listeners. If you have any doubt as to its truthfulness, I have a copy of Laura's obituary, and I'm happy to scan it and send it to you. Thanks, Lex, and keep up with the podcast. It's great.
This is Garrett Husbeth,
Brent Dolan,
and Al Robber
of the Haunted New Jersey podcast.
Hey, Al, what are you listening to?
I'm listening to Lex Wall's Anything Ghost podcast.
Do what we do at Haunted New Jersey and listen to Lex Wall's Anything Ghost podcast for spine-tingling tales of the paranormal from everyday people around the globe.
All right, and this is a message from Ryan in Louisiana. Hi, Lex. I wanted to recommend that all the fans of your show read the book The Myrtle's Plantation by Francis Kermeen. That's K-E-R-M-E-E-N. This is an excellent book that chronicles the years the author spent as the owner of the Myrtle's Plantation, also dubbed America's Most Haunted House. The house has a fascinating 200-year history. I was fortunate to have spent a night in this truly hauntingly beautiful home a couple of summers ago. Though I didn't see an actual apparition, I witnessed plenty. First of all, the clock on my cell phone stayed frozen at 7:07. Not sure what the significance of that time was, but it brought on an eerie feeling. The upstairs suite where I stayed has a heavy, dreadful feel that is hard to describe. In the late of the night, I also witnessed solid footsteps making their way up the stairwell. When I went out to investigate, no visible being was there. Also, pictures that were taken by my then brand new digital camera also contained evidence of the supernatural. In one, you could almost make out the silhouette of a man sitting in a chair. In another, where I am standing in front of the home's infamous mirror, my eyes are crystal blue. My eyes are normally green. I fell head over heels in love with this home after my visit there. I have since had an ongoing fascination with the Myrtle's Plantation. Okay, thanks, Ryan. That's Ryan in Louisiana. And the next one I got here is from Sarah in Oklahoma. When I was in college, I was a Spanish minor and had to knock out a few credits. I spent a summer in Mexico on a program from my university. We stayed in Pueblo, Mexico for a few weeks. While we were there, we stayed in a hotel that used to be a monastery during the days of the Inquisition. On one of my first days there, I finally succumbed to jet lag and laid down in my room to take a nap between classes. I heard the door to my room open, and then I heard footsteps on the floor of my room. Thinking it was my roommate, I called out her name and asked her to keep it down. Much to my surprise, the footsteps just kept clunking around. When I finally looked up, no one was there and the door was open. I had locked the door behind me when I came in. My roommate was at lunch, four stories down. The door opening and wandering around the room became a normal happening. I started keeping my door open because even if I would lock it, it would end up being open when my roommate or I came back. So we decided to name the ghost. Since he seemed to spend most of his time in our room, we named him Omar. It was all fun and games until one night the girls in the next room started banging on our door in the middle of the night, holding their pillows like little kids. One of the girls said she woke up to find an old man in a habit staring at her roommate while she slept. She stared at him for a moment, then asked him what he was doing in the room, when he just looked back at her and then went away. She jumped out of her bed and ran to our room. The old man was not the only thing in our room. When we would go take pictures, we would see orange orbs floating around our room that seemed to sense the electricity of the camera and then would vacate the room. We never took pictures, but would turn out the lights and watch the orange orbs float around in our viewfinder. I've never seen anything like it. It got to the point that we would sleep with the TV on at night to keep the footsteps and the orbs out of the room so we can get some sleep. Nothing in the hotel ever made us feel threatened, so it never really occurred to us to be scared. Since it was previously a monastery, we just figured that they were spirits of priests who still wanted to take care of the people there. I have more Mexico stories. That city is extremely haunted. But I'll send those later. Thanks so much, Sarah from Oklahoma. And thank you, Sarah. Thanks for that story. All right, and with that, that's the end of our stories for this week. But now I have some EVPs that I was going to share with you that some of my listeners sent to me. The first batch is from the TPRG group that sent some in last week, I think it was. But here's what they write. The EVPs were taken at my house on May 25th. My wife was working at the time, and I was all alone with the four-month-old twins. I just got them to sleep right next to me when I noticed our yellow lab was staring deeply at the corner of the room we were in. At the time, just for kicks, I picked up my recorder that was sitting right next to me. I recorded about 50 seconds, and during that time, there was no sound coming from anywhere. The TV was off, and the twins weren't making a sound. After a couple days went by, I picked up the recorder and downloaded it to my PC. This is what I got, referring to the recordings. And then he says, I have noticed that since we brought the twins home from the hospital, that activity around the house has picked up. Before this, we had a quiet house. Now we are hearing voices from the back bedrooms, strange sounds in the hallway late at night, and a shower radio that turned on by itself with the on and off button missing. We also had a picture fall from the PC table of my wife's grandmother break one early morning, waking the house up. Well, listen to the files and let me know what you think. Thanks for your time. And this is what he sent us. And he was saying that sounds like a little girl, obviously, saying I'm pretty. But the next one is this one. And that one, he says, he thinks it says, help me, the little girl's voice, and then a whispering male's voice saying, I'll kill her. But I'll play it one more time. Okay, I hope you could hear those, and thanks so much, David, of Tuscaloosa Paranormal Research Group. And we'll move on to the next batch that are from, this is from Josh of LEPIS.org. They have a podcast out that you should listen to, and he writes this. In December of 1846, the Mexican army clashed with a local tribe of Indians called the, excuse my pronunciation, Luisanos, which led to the massacre somewhere between 33 to 125 Indians. Records at that time were unclear of the death toll. We are covering the full history of the site on our podcast, but wanted to share a very good EVP we picked up at the site. We almost all agree that the voice in the EVP says I'm so cold, but there is some debate on this. For one thing, you have to point out the obvious that any voices from the time of the massacre would most likely be Spanish, Native American dialects, not English. There is always the strong possibility that we picked up a voice from something other than the target time. A site like this could attract all kinds of things. One thing we're certain of, however, is that there's little chance of it being an audio artifact. There was only one male on this research trip, myself, and there are actually two male voices overlapping in the EVP. Due to the volume of the voice, I thought it is to be considered a Class A, but I would love to know what others think. And so this is what he sent us.
I don't know. I keep getting, the midfield. I don't know. I'm like a guy. I keep getting like the midfield.
Okay, it's there at the end. It sounds like a whispering male voice saying, "I'm so cold." And then there's a female voice that follows it. I can't figure out what it's saying, but here, I'll play them for you one more time. Okay, I hope you all could pick that up. And thanks, Josh from lepis.org, for sending that in. And good luck with your podcast. And the last one I have is from George in Germany. He sent me one before, but it wasn't too clear. But this one's actually very nice. He went to a little chapel in Germany, and he sent me a photo of it. I'll put on my website. It's a cool-looking photo. It's a tiny little chapel. And he recorded it, and he thought the voice said, "Ah, amen," a lady's voice. And here, I'll play it for you. Okay, well, that wasn't as clear as when I first heard it, when I first listened to it, but I don't know if you can make something out. Let me know. So that'll be it for Anything Ghost number 42, and thanks for listening in, and I hope you enjoyed it. And please be sure to check out the Anything Ghost website and sign my Frapper map if you haven't done so, and thanks to everyone who did. The last couple weeks, quite a few people joined in. And that's about it. So have yourself a great week. And I just want to make one more point before I log off. I usually don't do this, but down in Southern California, somebody's taking pot shots at dolphins. And four of them have been found dead on the shore. They bled to death in the ocean, washed up on the shore down in San Diego. And I think that's just a horrible thing. And I wish the worst for the person or persons who are doing that.